Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 6th. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative O'Neill moves approval of the minutes dated April 4th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on our agenda, we reward prompt attendance. So Representative Baker, we'll go with you first. After that, we'll move to Representative House Files 3458 and House File 3114, the Erickson and Lewick bills. After that, we'll move to Representative Hamilton's bill on the Lewis and Clark system. The O'Neill bill, 3512, will definitely be this evening. And depending upon members' attendance, we'll just have to be flexible about when we when authors are here to present bills. So, oh, Representative Moran's already here, so you'll be rewarded as well for good attendance. So, Representative Baker. Okay. All right. Well, I lied. We're not going to start with Representative Baker. We're going to start with Representative Moran. Representative Moran, come on down. You're the only one here, right? And Representative Moran, do you have a member to move your bill?
I will move the bill.
Representative Hortman moves House File 3097 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Moran, I'm going to say, if we give you about 15 minutes for your presentation, is that good?
That's perfect.
So I'll let you police the time, but then we'll at 1 o'clock we'll have a hard stop. So right. Representative Moran, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for allowing me to come before you to move House File 3097 from the African Economic Development Solution, who has been doing a really great job in getting people to work and really advocating strongly for a small business loan, for a small business opportunity. And what I'm going to do is turn this over to my testifier.
Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And if you could, just take your microphone and pull it a little bit towards so you can hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity. My name is Jean Galgalou, Executive Director of African Economic Development Solutions, a nonprofit organization that serves African immigrants in Twin City Metro-wide. We're located in 1821 University Avenue, suite number S292, St. Paul, Minnesota 55104. Our service area is Twin City Metro-wide, while our office is located in St. Paul. We do business development training. We do technical assistance, which is our consulting service. We do work on a loan. Our loan fund is only $5,000. The maximum loan fund we have is only $5,000. And that's why I'm here today to testify the challenge of African immigrants here in Twin City Metro-wide. We did the research last year. Dr. Bruce Corey, which is the documents, it's printed over there, in partnership with our organization, 67.3% of African immigrants have difficulty of accessing loan fund. That's a big challenge. While we have a training, we have a business development consulting, cultural preparedness, but still the bottleneck for our organization is a loan fund. When they save money, they want to start their business, but they cannot finance because the challenge is having a loan fund. So I'm here to testify as the business owner who firsthand experienced that challenge. Dr. Abe Dalu, who is the owner of A&A, Reliable Home Care Business.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Abraham Dalu, Honorable Pat Grafalo, and Honorable members of the committee. As I said, my name is Abraham or Abe Dalu, and I'm the owner of ANA Reliable Home Health Care Agency. With this agency, we provide in-house services that include skilled nursing visits, home care nursing, home health aid, physical, occupational, speech therapies, personal care assistance, homemaking, and independent living skills. Let me just touch on one thing, even though I'm here to ask for your unwavering support for House Bill 3097, which is requested by African Economic Development Solution. Before coming to this business, I've been with the higher institutional sectors and with the FDA laboratories in Jefferson, Arkansas, involved in pharmaceutical development research. And then after many years, we decided to come into my wife and I, who is a registered nurse for close to 30 years, decided the need for the baby boomers who will be sooner or later going to retire, and the seniors, disabled individuals who have a great need here in our state of Minnesota. So after many years of service and research, I thought where I can make impact is starting my own business. And in doing so, I certainly needed assistance from different nonprofit organizations. One of such organization is African Economic Development Solution. In the area of incredible support received in the area of marketing and finance literacy and so forth. And we are glad to see that we are growing, but the greatest challenge we face in our time, especially for immigrant community, is getting access to loans. In this particular point, we are ready to move on to start group housing where it's needed for many disabled individuals, for seniors. I'm sure many of you have family members, somebody you know, who would need this kind of service, which is really growing. The trend is going in that direction. As I stated, the great challenge we as business owners have is having access to expand our business in a meaningful way. And I'm here to say, believe the United States is still the greatest nation in the face of the world. I've lived in a former Soviet Union, going to school there for 6 years. I've lived in Germany, and now I'm here in the United States since 1984. While I appreciate other places where I lived, which served as a transition for me to immigrate to the United States, there is no place like the United States, because you can become whomever you want to be. And you can, get a chance. And it's, they say it's a land of opportunity. Yes, indeed, it's a land of opportunity. But again, the challenge, as I said briefly, and having access to loan is our greatest challenge. And I'm hoping that this committee would approve the revolving loan requested by African Economic Development Solution, and also the technical assistance that they are requesting. And businesses like mine will be beneficiaries of these fundings. And our agency is here in business just to make a difference in the state of Minnesota. And I thank you for your consideration.
Representative Moran, do you have any further testifiers?
Yes, we do.
And that was Mr. Dalwu?
Yes, sir.
Спасибо, очень хорошо.
Очень интересно.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Farida Mohamud Mohammed, and I'm a consultant with African Economic Development Solutions. I'm here to vouch for I don't speak the numbers that were needed. I don't know what the House bill number is, but for technical assistance, resources to small business. I have been in economic development field in Minnesota for the last 5 years. I in my role with African Economic Development Solutions, they send me out to small businesses to provide technical assistance in relation to accounting. I am a certified public accountant licensed in the state of Minnesota. So we're not only providing daily technical assistance, we're providing really high-skilled professional TA that's needed by our small minority-owned businesses. So I'm here to vouch for that bill. If you have any questions, I'll take a question otherwise.
Members, any questions at this time? Proceed. Any more testifiers, Representative Moran?
Mr. Chair.
We had two more on the list, so I was...
Yeah, we had several testifiers on the list, but we were told that we only had 10 minutes, so okay. Right. We kind of scaled down some.
I understand. Thank you. Any member questions here? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if this is a question to Gene. You could. Mr. Chair, and to Gene, I understand, and we've spoken any number of times, and I've read most of the studies about minority-owned businesses. I understand that you have a very small revolving loan fund, but one of the studies talks about not just one of these, but many studies talk about the larger the loan, the larger the business, and the larger the business, the more earning power the business has for the owner of the business. In essence, many of the immigrant communities are starting up businesses in low-margin companies. So if this money comes to the African Development Corporation, what size loans are you looking to make with this, and are you going to change the focus? Because I know the focus has been of your organization, and you've gone to low-margin type businesses because that's what you've had the money to do. Where do you plan on going with this $500,000 in loan fund and $250,000 in technical assistance?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Mahoney, thank you so much. AEDS, just let me give a brief of what we did with that $5,000. $5,000 we had one particular business in Minneapolis. They desperately need a loan fund. And we use our $1,234 and ask our partner to bring other resources, leveraged of about $20,000 leveraged with partnership to provide small business lending. That particular business was able to secure their liquor license to do the handicap accessible bathroom and exit door. And that business, in a year after year, purchased the building. That's a kind of success story that we have as organization supporting small business, seeming small business at the time, but they will scale up. With these resources, we want to scale up, not only Twin City, seeing we have in suburb. The biggest challenge we have right now serving in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, because we don't have resources. In Anoka, we don't have resources. We have a tremendous need over that side. We have business in Lakeville. We don't have resources. We only have resources in certain places. So, especially in Minneapolis, St. Paul East Metro, for example, we had appropriation last year. With your help, last year we secured fund. We have tremendous outcome because of that funding. We have about seven new businesses created as a result of appropriation. Last year we received it. With this loan fund, we're going to still leverage as a partnership relationship to provide resources to help access loan fund. Still, the scale that we envisioned is a small scale because this money will provide small loan funding. The technical assistance will be the key component of our work because of the cultural appropriateness of our service. We have made tremendous outcome. based on our size of our organization.
Representative Mahoney, any further questions?
I'm good.
Further questions? Is there any testimony? Would anyone from the public like to testify towards this bill? All right, seeing none, any other member questions? With that, Melissa, Representative Hortman renews her motion to lay this over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Mm-hmm. All right, our next...
3458, yeah.
Our next bill will be Representative Erickson, House File 3458. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you will move House File 3458, and I also have a delete all the DE3 amendment.
Okay. Representative Erickson, let's get the bill in the shape that you'd like it to. The chair moves your bill and also the amendment that you're referencing here to get the bill in the shape that you want. All those in favor of the DE amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Your bill is amended. Representative Erickson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Lake Mille Lacs Area Economic Relief Program, brought to you in part by the governor's desire to help this area. He had proposed a special session last fall that did not occur, but he has still remained engaged, and so this is a work in progress as I continue to work with the Department of Revenue and DEED. So I'm focusing on Section 1. And as you can see there, Mille Lacs County will be like the fiscal agent or the intermediary for DEED or the Department of Revenue to develop and operate this relief program to assist businesses that were adversely affected by the decline in walleye fishing on Lake Mille Lacs. As you know, the DNR closed the lake one of the first days of August last year to any walleye fishing. This program could consist of grants or interest-free or forgivable loans if they do not exceed $100,000 per business, tourism promotion, and Mille Lacs County would establish the grant and loan program, the duration, the terms, the requirements in consultation with DEED, and that's the piece we're still working on as DEED becomes further engaged. The area that is affected would be 14 townships around Lake Mille Lacs. That's in three counties, Mille Lacs, Crow Wing, and Aiken, and the cities that are located within those 14 townships. The qualification so far on page 2 in line 2.5 is to document a reduction in gross receipts in any two-year period since 2010, and then, of course, to be one of the businesses as defined by the North American Industry Classification System. Then an audit is required by DEED. They are working in consultation with Mille Lacs County. Mr. Chair, I have with me Pat Ullman, who is the Mille Lacs County administrator who would be coordinating this program. He has a lot of experience. He did this in Carlton County a few years ago. I also have at my left Commissioner Dave Oslin, and at my far right Tina Chapman, who is head of tourism in the Lakes area.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Mr. Ullman, would you please state your name for the record if you have testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Ullman. I'm the county administrator with the Mille Lacs County.
Okay, and did you have anything you wanted to add to this?
I would, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing us to be part of this bill. As Representative Erickson indicated, one of the big things that happened, we all come from somewhere, and prior to being a county administrator and a city administrator, I was the Director of Economic Development for Carlton County. In 2012, the whole region had a major disaster, and many U.S. legislatures probably recall that. One of the programs that the state provided was a Minnesota Investment Fund for commercial flood victims. And that was $10 million for that whole region. Carlton County took the lead on that and developed the application to be used and also implemented that application ahead of many of the government units. Our county in particular had only two government units. When I say cities, townships, school districts, only two of the government units within our county didn't have disasters. So it was a major disaster for Carlton County. But we were able to implement a model and an application to invest $2 million of that Minnesota Investment Fund money to commercial businesses as a zero interest, partially deferred and forgivable loan. Very successful. And we got that $2 million out in 6 months under a structured loan application, loan review process with defined performance measures that focused on growth, expansion, developing new tax revenue, developing jobs within the area. So this bill is really about creating wealth for this area. It's a wealth strategic planning model for our area, and it's very much needed. And what these businesses are looking for, and I know Tina will be able to talk about this as well, is we have businesses that need some gap financing. They need some assistance to not only continue on with their existing business, but to be more creative and expand in areas that perhaps they would not have been able to without the investment. So I'm really excited about the opportunity, and I really hope and appreciate your attention to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Ullman. Representative Erickson, any further testifiers?
Tina Chapman, head of tourism around Lake Mille Lacs.
Welcome, Tina. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tina Chapman, and I'm the executive director of Mille Lacs Area Tourism. As Representative Erickson said, we were kicked in the teeth last August when we had an unprecedented walleye closure. We were then double-kicked this winter with late ice, and then we anticipated generating some operating income when we had a one-fish walleye season, but that didn't happen for most of the winter businesses. We were recently kicked in the teeth again, just recently, with a catch-and-release open-water season with no use of live bait and an all-season-long 10 p.m. night ban. It's another unprecedented move, which will bring even more economic disaster to the area. We simply have no teeth left. Resorts started receiving cancellations within 1 hour of the regulation release. A resort I spoke to a couple nights ago has already had 20 cancellations. I myself own a small resort. I've already lost two week-long reservations, and there's no way to know who's not calling. And if it's not cancellations, they're asking for significant discounts because of the regulations. Mm-hmm. A launch business I spoke to yesterday has lost 4 reservations already. An Isle Main Street business told me that this will be their last summer they're open because of the lack of visitors spending money in their tourist-related business. The local newspaper said their ad sales for one of their summer guides is down 60%. The impact is far more reaching than just resorts. It trickles down to almost every business and individual around the lake. The communities are having a hard time keeping and attracting residents. The schools are having difficulty with budgets because of families not staying in the area. And businesses, especially those in the hospitality sector, are concerned that they'll have to cut employees even deeper. We're thankful that the tourism marketing dollars are being considered, and not only does the area need these marketing dollars, but we need this full economic assistance package, and it's essential for businesses to survive and continue to thrive. We can market the heck out of the area, but if we have nothing for the people to come to when the marketing, then the marketing dollars are wasted. Excuse me. Economic relief for the area goes hand in hand with tourism dollars. These struggles haven't been just since this last August. It's been ongoing and have continually increased over the last few years as the regulations have continued to tighten. Businesses are making minimal, if any, improvements to their properties right now, and some are unable to make their full payments. Mille Lacs Lake reputation has been severely damaged, and investing in the Mille Lacs area in this way is a valuable investment for all Minnesotans, because when the people want to visit, even if it isn't until the lake situation improves, they'll be able to enjoy one of the precious gems of Minnesota. We are a proud community. We're not looking for handouts. Instead, we are looking for a hand up to survive and weather the storm that we had nothing to do with in creating. As Sandra Erickson also mentioned, the governor recommended $15 to $20 million in our working sessions for the summer, whatever it's called. So in this, I ask for your support on this economic relief package. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman, for your testimony. We did have one member question. Representative Metza, did you want to ask now, or do you want to wait for our final testifier?
I can wait for the final testifier, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Erickson, proceed.
Mr. Chair, the appropriation is for $5 million, and it's one time only. since I'm trying to make sure that we don't have any tails, we might have to come back in subsequent years. But I'd like to have Commissioner Dave Oslin just talk a little bit about the tax base of the Lake Mille Lacs area.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. My name is Dave Oslin. I'm Mille Lacs County Commissioner, 5th District, which is the north end of Mille Lacs County. My area covers 4 townships that all touch the lakes and 3 cities, small towns, Iowaka and Onemia. I would just like to reiterate a little bit off the other testimony there. When it comes to, our administrator explained it very good about the gap financing here. We all know we're kind of in a hard spot here, and of course you folks hear that several times. This particular spot that we're in, when we mention a hand up, not a handout, the focus in my mind that I would like to portray would certainly be a lot of these folks that own these businesses need to diversify a little bit, because we've all found out we're very dependent on particular walleye fishing. And so they don't have the financing, the resources to diversify quite yet, along with the uncertainty of what's really going to happen. So I just want to portray that out to you folks, too, as a focus for this. But in regards to the county and the makeup of the county, my district alone, we have 5 districts, of course, and my district alone accounts for more than one-third of the tax base for Mille Lacs County. We are not a very wealthy county. We're working on that with our new administrator. We're trying to create more wealth, and we're doing it in a number of ways to become a more friendly county. But just to let you folks know that my district alone last year dropped over $26 million in value. And I know you folks down here work with what we call shifts and things of that nature. When my district drops in value, and a lot of that was due to the lakeshore property, the rest of the county as a whole, along with my district, all of us have to pick that value up for the tax capacity. And it is significant. We would like to have more businesses and certainly like to retain the ones we have. But in regards to tax capacity, we're at roughly $18.5 million. And $2.5 million of that is business tax capacity. So we are, as you know, in a little bit of a pickle here. But again, I'd like to also throw this out. I, too, along with Tina, serve on the new committee for the Mille Lacs Lake Fishery Advisory to the DNR. And I do believe there is going to be a comeback. I would like to say that publicly, that there is going to be a turnaround here at some point in time. And it will be due to a lot of efforts from a lot of folks. But until that day comes, we certainly appreciate your entertaining this.
And, thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony. Before we move on to member questions, I think I'm going to see if we have any other testifiers in the audience. Is there anyone here that would like to testify from the public towards this bill? Seeing that there is none, I'm going to move on to member questions. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson. The bill's come a long way. I just emailed and added my name to it. As long as you're willing to have me on, I look forward to getting that relief out to the folks in the area.
Thank you, Representative Metz. So we still have a little way to go on the bill, but we're making it.
Any further follow-up? Representative Metz. Are you good?
Sure.
All right, Representative Simonson. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm working on the delete all amendment and line 16, where Mille Lacs County is making the grants and loans according to criteria and procedures established by the county in consultation with DEED. I'll use the acronym. Where are, Representative Erickson, where are you in establishing those procedures and the criteria for these loans?
Thank you, Representative Mahoney and committee. We have been through the House Research Department trying to coordinate with DEED, and I think now we've had that communication, so that's going to begin. I believe, Mr. Chair, this bill is going to taxes, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so between now and taxes, we need to refine that so that when it arrives at the next stop, we have figured out with deed what percentage they want us to look at. They've thought about 5% decline or 10% decline in business, but we haven't reached an agreement yet. And perhaps Mr. Ullman would like to comment also on that consultation.
Mr. Ullman, would you like to comment on that?
If I may, Chair, thank you. There is a loan review process that certainly would take place if these fundings would be available, and I've already structured a loan application and a review process, and the financial ratios that would fit very nicely into a local public revolving loan fund. I have not shared that with the Department of Employee and Economic Development, but I will be shortly. And we had to do the same thing when I was with Carlton County, provided that application and that review process so they had a comfort level of that the loans were giving the due diligence that they deserve. And that's one point I think it's important for the committee to understand, that this is an investment by approving this bill with a return. We very much expect that the loans that we'll be doing are going to be good loans, very well structured loans, and loans that will funding that will come back. It's important to provide the right incentives for business, but at the same time, the right structure to meet the performance measures that we're looking for in our community.
Representative Mahoney, any follow up?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you. You talked about Carlton County. I'll ask a first question, and then I'll get to that one. I hear a lot of questions or a lot of statements about having ideas and thoughts on this development, and you have to expand and get out of the comfort zone and move beyond a relying on a fish. Are there business plans that have been written and presented to the economic development, or are we still in the idea stage looking for ways to write the business plan? Where are we in business plans? Where are we in ideas?
Mr. Ullman.
Yeah, if I could respond, Chair. Thank you for the question. There has been a two-year process, actually, with an economic development task force at the county to develop strategic objectives for diversifying our county and our economy. That actually has just been brought to a conclusion recently. In fact, Tina sat on that economic development task force. I've also developed a wealth creation strategic planning model that will be reviewed with our county here next month at their board meeting, and I'd be happy to provide that to the committee. One of the other important things that we've set up as a county, or the board has given approval to set up, is a county economic development authority, housing redevelopment authority, that would have geographical representation from private and public sector throughout the county. As you know, we have a very long county. It takes about a half hour, I think, to drive from one end to another, and that's if you're a police officer going on high speed. It's geographically diverse, yes, but it's geographically diverse. So we feel an economic development authority, housing redevelopment authority, is a good opportunity to vet loans, the vet funding mechanisms that get eventually brought to the board for approval, but at the same time allow us to continue to evolve our wealth creation strategic planning model.
Thank you, Mr. Ullman. Representative Mahoney, any further follow-up?
So, yeah, I've got a couple here.
Representative Mahoney.
So back to my original question, where are you in the business plans? Because no loan should be made without a plan for how it's going to be spent. So are there business plans that have been written, or are you planning on writing them after this bill is passed?
Mr. Ullman.
Yeah. How many do you have?
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the question. Well, that's very interesting that you were to bring that up, because in a loan review process, when there is a business that is interested in funding, in the model that I've created, in the application process that I create, a business plan is required. And at the same time, we would certainly require not only to understand what the business's objectives are, but how that funding will play a role in achieving that, and what will be happening in the next 5 or 10 years. When we look at a business plan, it's not just about marketing what the existing business is doing, but also what the potential of the business will be, and not what the business's existing financials are, but what the pro forma financials will be. Those would be an integral part of a loan review process for each business that approaches the county with regards to a funding request.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm just going to take it that you don't have business plans in place at the present time, and they will have to be developed after this bill is passed. Because I've asked the question twice, I'm not going to ask it a third time.
Right, with that,
I have another question, though, if I could, Mr. Chair.
You may, Mr. Representative Mahoney.
These are all loans, because they're not, they're forgivable loans, but they're interest-free or forgivable. So those loans that are paid back, where does the $100,000 per business per year, if they're paid back, where does that money go? Is it coming back to the state? I don't see any revolving loan establishment in here. I don't see any agency that the money comes back to, whether it's MMB or revenue or deed. Or is the plan, Representative Erickson, to come back in a year or two and say that these loans that are paid back get to be kept up and continue as a revolving loan fund up in Mille Lacs Lake? Because that's kind of what people do around here. They come in and say, I want one-time money, but I want to, you know, and I'm going to pay it back. I'm going to pay it back. I promise. I really am. But 2 or 3 years later, they come back and say, we'd like to keep this money up in our particular area. Is that the plan?
Representative Mahoney, is that a statement or a question?
That was a question.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Mahoney, I think this is one of the details that we're working on with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And along with Mr. Oman and in consultation with them, I think that'll be determined. So I think that'll be done before this bill is consummated, if and when it is.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a statement. The bill has a lot of work to do. You know, there was several months in order to get relief up to the Iron Range. I certainly hope this bill is treated better than the Iron Range is, or was. I do hope you come up with these answers before it hits the floor or when it does hit the floor.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the Commissioner. I apologize, Commissioner. I don't remember your last name, but you said that you're confident that the fishery is going to come back. I also serve on the Environmental Natural Resources Committee. How long do you anticipate before the fishery comes back, and what can we do here in St. Paul to help you in that process?
Commissioner.
And if you'd care to have an offline conversation, I understand that may be appropriate.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, yes, I would appreciate an offline conversation, but when I say it's going to come back, that's because of all the reports from committee members, from DNR personnel, from what we see the lake doing. When that's coming back, we're not completely sure, but I believe it's more in the short term than the long term, and that's because of the efforts the state has made, particularly through the DNR, by forming a committee and by taking input. And to what degree it comes back, I mean, we all know, we remember the days when there was 400,000 pounds plus, you know, harvestable surplus. I don't know when we'll get back to that, because Mille Lacs, as you know, is a kind of a self-producer there. But I mean coming back enough so that the businesses can thrive. But I would appreciate a private conversation. But I will say this, that the DNR personnel, in fact, they're working right today as we speak on a conference call about the regulations they set out, and they're speaking with the Mille Lacs Advisory Committee, which shows we're all dedicated very much to making this resource come back. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having a conversation, and that's about changing the regulations that they previously announced.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Fabian, any follow-up questions?
Thank you.
No more questions at this time, Representative. One more, Representative Clark.
Just a quick question. Is it my understanding is the tribal community helping stock the lakes too?
Commissioner.
Could you repeat, please? I'm sorry.
I think it's my understanding that there's also some stocking happening from the tribal communities. Is that right? Fish stocking? Stocking of the fish. Maybe that's an easier way to say it.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So far, the DNR has talked about doing some stocking, but the stocking that they've talked about is taking the fish and the eggs out of Mille Lacs Lake and putting them in a quiet zone, if you will, a private zone, and then putting them back. they're reluctant to do what we all would figure as stocking would be, in other words, taking fish from somewhere else where they're abundant and using those eggs. So it will be the same spawn, the same from the same lake, but so far that's just been the DNR that has mentioned that. It's not for sure yet.
Representative Clark, follow up?
No, just to keep me informed, I guess.
No further questions. With that, Representative Erickson, any closing comments on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Thank you for hearing this proposal, and we'll be refining it quite a bit more as we work with DEED and the Department of Revenue.
With that, the Chair renews the motion to advance House File 3458 to taxes as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion carries. The next bill is 3114, Representative Lewick. At this time, I want to make an announcement. We're going to have this room past 2:30 this afternoon. The Mining Committee will not be meeting today. Our goal, we're going to go a little long today to try to hear all the bills on our agenda, so we've got our work cut out for us. Additionally, we will be meeting tomorrow evening, TBA. We'll get back to you with the information where. The agenda will include probably four or five House files. So once again, members, we're going to be here a little late today, and the Mining Committee won't be here. Representative Lewick, welcome to the committee. At this time, Representative Fabian, would you like to move House File 3114?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
So moved. And at this time, for possible inclusion for a later bill, Representative Lewick, do you have an amendment to this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. I believe it's the A-16 amendment.
It's the A-16 amendment. And Representative Fabian, would you like to move that amendment?
I would so move the A-16, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Lewick, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A-16 amendment simply catches us up to where we're at today. As you heard, the kind of a big picture description of what's going on in Mille Lacs Lake. Since I originally drafted 314, we've had the most recent announcement on the fishing regulations, which turned out to be a little different than we anticipated, what really depressed our market, and you've heard the immediate impact on that. So there's more dollars needed immediately to reach out and fix that market so that we can do our best here to fill in through the summer and get to next fall and hopefully a better situation. So this is a work in progress. And also, the governor was just a little bit ahead of us. He independently had came up with a number almost identical to this number. And this would be funds that would apply now, current budget time, because we can't let this marketing issue slip any further.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. And to your amendment, Representative Fabian again moves that amendment. We're all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. All right, Representative Lewick, now, do you have any further testifiers to your bill?
Yes, Ms. Chapman is here, and she can probably outline the issue here, and this is very focused. This is to continue a very broad marketing approach here to change how we view Mille Lacs Lake. And we look at this as a premier recreational area, a little bit different than what we've done historically, and that is that it's a premier walleye fishery area. We're talking big picture here now, and we really have to get that message out, and we have to get it out hard, because we've got a tremendous recreational area there. We just got to make sure people know about it and not get caught up in one particular type of fish that may be available.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Just a house cleaning item here. That was the A-16 amendment for clarification that we voted on, not the A-1. My paper here was not correct. That was the A-16 amendment. Ms. Chapman, once again, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Tina Chapman, and I'm the Executive Director of Mille Lacs Area Tourism. Mille Lacs Area Tourism has been working hard with Explore Minnesota Tourism and Red House Media over the last year to diversify our markets and change people's attitudes about the lake. Mille Lacs Tourism itself is funded by a lodging tax, but as cancellations occur due to the ever-tightening fishing regulations, we're losing our main source of funding when we so desperately need it. In my earlier testimony, I talked about some of the businesses that have been experiencing loss, and that's just the beginning. A few days ago, a northern Minnesota business was marketing their destination by using our misfortune. They have since removed those blog posts and social media posts. But if people in our own state are using those tactics, can you imagine what the surrounding states are doing? So it's critical that we continue our marketing efforts. Lake Mille Lacs now has a drastically shrinking pie of interested customers, and we need to replace those customers with new customers, and that takes additional dollars to convey the promise of Lake Mille Lacs outside the traditional walleye fishermen. We know fishing is an important part of Mille Lacs tradition, and we've just started to tap into other fish species markets like smallmouth bass, so we can't stop now. We also have a group of interested citizens who are pursuing a scenic byway designation. The counties and the local snowmobile and ATV clubs hope to expand their trail systems. Businesses are working to diversify, but these things take time, and right now time isn't on our side. The Mille Lacs area needs your help in order for us to continue our efforts and bring people to the area. An instance is we recently did some really good PR stories about the kite crossing, and two guys that rode their fat bikes across the north end of Mille Lacs this winter. We estimated the cost of those stories to be about $88,000 worth of free advertising through the various outlets, media outlets that picked those up. Unfortunately, negative reports came out soon after those great stories, and they've been lost in the chaos. Every time we seem to take a step forward, we're shoved three steps back. And as I said earlier, Mille Lacs' reputation has been damaged, and it's a constant battle to keep our name out there in the positive light. With that said, I ask for your support on House File 3114. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman. Any further testifiers from the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing that there are none, let's move on to member questions. Members, any questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Lewick, I heard the smallmouth bass reference in here. I'm an avid smallmouth bass fisherman. Hopefully you can line me up with somebody and we'll fish Lake Mille Lacs this summer.
Representative, thank you,
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. That gives me an opportunity to make sure everybody understands we're going to have a world-class bass fishing tournament.
You
can come and watch on Mille Lacs this year, and that's an example. And in order to properly market that, we have to reach clear out, way out to Florida and you name it, because we get folks that will come for that venue from all over the country. The unfortunate thing is, it costs a lot more than simply letting our friends here in the metro area know what we do up there. But yes, that's a big one of those best kept secrets of Mille Lacs Lake. So I won't say any more on that.
Members, any further questions? Seeing that there aren't, and Representative Lewick, you get the last word on your bill here.
Members, thank you for your time, and I would just respectfully request your support.
Now, with that, Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay over House File 3114 as amended in the A16 amendment for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have Representative Hamilton, House File 3717. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And
I'll move that one.
Representative Metza, would you like to move House File 3717? Representative Metza moves 3717. Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the funding request for the third and final phase of the Lewis and Clark Water Project. 2014, we funded the first phase, and I'm happy to report that is completed and water has been delivered to Laverne. In 2015, we funded the second phase, and that is on schedule and on budget. And now we're requesting for the third and final phase to complete the project into the city of Worthington. We will stand for questions. If you want any additional information, I also have some testifiers. But my dear friend Scott said he doesn't need to talk unless spoken to.
Right?
That's correct.
Well, that's good news, Representative Hamilton. With that, if you're going to forego your testifiers, is there anyone here from the public that would wish to testify that wasn't brought here by Representative Hamilton? Seeing that there's no further testifiers from the public, I'll open this up to member questions. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hamilton, obviously, I think this is one of these things that people have kind of looked at as a must-do this session. Can you just very briefly, for those members who are not familiar with the project, just explain why it's necessary, why it's required, and why it really has bipartisan support, or to your testifier?
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know what? It is a must-do, and I think we do want to hear from the testifier because he's been very much involved in this.
Representative Hamilton, to your testifier. Sir, please state your name for the record, and thank you for coming, and welcome to committee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Scott Hain. I'm the general manager of Worthington Public Utilities, and I'm also Worthington's representative on the Lewis and Clark Board of Directors. Representative Garofalo, members, to your question, you know, the Lewis and Clark project was incorporated 26 years ago in 1990, authorized by U.S. Congress in 2000. It is going to serve 20 members in a three-state area, southeast South Dakota, northwest Iowa, and southwest Minnesota. There are four members in Worthington, or four members in southwest Minnesota. As Representative Hamilton indicated, the issue that we ran into is federal funding that was promised is coming in at a snail's pace. 3-4 years ago, there was no light at the end of the tunnel as to when the Minnesota members could potentially receive water. 2014, we were encouraged to come up and request help from the state. 2014, we did get funding for phase one of the project, and as Representative Hamilton indicated, Laverne began receiving water on March 14th. Funding received last year is in place to extend to Lincoln Pipestone's connection near Adrian, and what we're up here for today is asking for funding that, if received this session, will allow Worthington to be hooked up and begin receiving Lewis and Clark water by the summer of 2018.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hain. Thank you for your testimony. With that, no further member questions? Being that there are no further member questions, Representative Hamilton, you have the last word.
I ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Those are good words. And with that, we will, Representative Mensa renews his motion to lay this over, House File 3717, for possible inclusion for a later bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next on the roster here, I believe, is we're looking at Baker. Let's go with Rarick. Okay. Representative Rarick, House File 3658. Representative Rarick, come on down.
Mr. Chair, if we have any holes, I got some bills we can definitely take up.
I have some, too. Representative Rarick, welcome to the committee. And I think Representative Gunther, would you like to move House File 3658?
It would be my pleasure.
And this will be laid over for possible inclusion in another bill. Representative Rarick, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3658 is a construction and career pathways bill. It provides funding for a 501c3 organization founded in 2004, the purpose of which is to help promote the construction industry trades to kids in high school and younger folks as well. The initiative places particular emphasis on outreach to females, veterans, members of minority and immigrant groups who have historically been underrepresented in the construction trades. For a number of years, we have seen a sharp decline in the number of industrial arts classes that are being offered in high schools, which has been a way that kids become familiar with the trades programs. And so without those classes, many don't really even understand that these jobs are out there. Because of a lack of awareness of the opportunities, this has led to a decline in the number of people from the traditional labor pool applying for these types of jobs. And so this organization helps to promote that And when this was brought forward to me, I had particular interest. Many of you know I've been in the IBEW 110 for 25 years, and for 5 years served on our apprenticeship committee. These very things are things that we were dealing with 15 years ago. A large portion of the construction trades are baby boomers who are all going to be retiring, and we are seeing a drastic need for construction trades. And one of the benefits that I see of this program, we've heard many discussions of how do we help people coming out of college with large debt and every other issues with higher education. This is a great program. There are so many job opportunities out there that you can get after a two-year school program or go right into an apprenticeship program, that we could avoid many people who go through a four-year degree, come out with debt, and end up in a job like this anyway. If we can get them aware of these programs and steer them there right away, they won't come out with debt and they'll be earning good income right away. So with that, I would turn it over to my testifiers for some more of the details of the program.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association and the Minnesota Contractors of the National Electrical Contractors Association. I represent about 300 contractors who do plumbing, heating, air conditioning, and electrical work across the state of Minnesota, and we're located also across the state of Minnesota. We are having difficulty attracting people into the construction industry. It's hard work. It's hard on your body. And it's dirty. And that's one of the reasons that those are some of the reasons that we're having trouble getting people to come to our industry. We think we've done this on a local area in the Twin Cities on a pilot project, and it's been very successful. We've been able to get into career fairs in high schools in front of literally thousands of students. We have a lot of interest from those students, and so we'd like to expand this so we can go statewide. We have a website, constructioncareers.org, that we've had for a number of years. Unfortunately, it's very static. It needs to be refreshed. We need to bring social media into as part of this effort and tie that into the website, and so we're going to be doing that also. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you for testimony. I'm going to hold off on questions just for a minute. Do we have one more testifier here? Did you have one more, Representative Rarick? Two more. Okay. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Forrest Sear, and I represent the Builders Association of Minnesota and 3,000 member businesses statewide.
Could you spell your last name for us?
My last name is C-Y-R.
C-Y-R. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I'll be brief. We just want to express our support for this important initiative and thank Representative Rarick and the other authors for encouraging young people into the trades where there are a bevy of well-paying jobs that we think would be great opportunities for young people throughout the state, and it is always an important thing to encourage that. So we just want to encourage your support, and thank you, Representative Rarick, for your efforts on that area.
Thank you, Mr. Sear, for your testimony. And Representative Rarick, we had one more here. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Donald Mullen. I'm the Executive Secretary of the St. Paul Building and Construction Trades Council. And wanted to thank you very much and offer and ask you for your support in this. We've been doing a great job around construction training, but we need to do more. And there's a lot more opportunity with this ability, we'll be able to reach outstate, greater Minnesota is what I should say, and be able to bring more of this training to those great places. We've seen here in the metro that with this program, we've been able to work Construct Tomorrow and bring 400 to 500 kids into and show them and give them this exposure to into the trade. So I think it's a great thing and would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone here from the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing that there is none, I'm going to close public testimony and open up to member questions. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rarick, great bill here. I know visiting with our contractors and carpenters back in KUI County, they are dying for workers. This is a great program. It sounds good. I was in your last testifier mentioned a little bit about Greater Minnesota. Some of your past help in supporting this, because it's a St. Paul-based organization here, can you tell me some of the support you've given to Greater Minnesota too, in the past to sort of, you know, how does that work with balancing kind of the metro urban stuff with the greater Minnesota needs? Do you have any thoughts or comments on that, please?
Representative Burke. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker. As I have spoke with the other people involved with the program, there is an outreach to all of Minnesota through all the schools and such. They make that offer to any school within the state, to my understanding. So, yeah, they are trying to make an awareness out there for bringing back these industrial arts classes and things of that nature. So we're hoping that they, schools outside of the metro area too, are going to be finding out about this and asking for some of this assistance.
Representative Baker, follow up. You're good. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rarick, thank you for bringing this forward. I was just wondering, Mr. Mullen, do you think that a robust transportation bill this year might help get some of those folks to work right away as well?
Of course. Of course I do.
To the testifier.
Oh, excuse me.
Representative Rarick.
Sorry.
I do it all the time.
Mr. Chair, Chairman, Representative Metza, yes, of course I do.
Well, thank you. And one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yep, Representative Metza.
Representative Rarick, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it will do good for our region, and there's lots of good prospects. You know, we've talked a lot about pipelines in here, some construction projects, refabricating PolyMet should it get a permit. And those are thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of work that I hope we can get younger folks into. I know my wife is not in the construction trade. She's got a degree from McAllister, and those school bills get expensive. So for those folks who maybe school isn't the best option right now, the trades do pay well, and you get a good pension, good paycheck, and I think those are very important things to move forward. So I appreciate your work on the issue.
Any further member questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to piggyback a little bit on what has already been said by Representative Baker and others, this is an important issue, particularly in greater Minnesota where I live, and I support the idea. Another real firecracker bill here by Representative Rarick.
Any final questions, members? Seeing that there are no final questions, Representative Rarick, you get the last word on your bill here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to close out quick, the Department of Labor predicts that over about the next 8 years, there's going to be just short of 800,000 jobs needed in the construction industry across the country. So programs like this are very much needed. We saw last year on FFA days, Humboldt High School came in. They started a FFA program and presented industrial arts classes. Kids who were normally falling out of school, not even finishing high school, suddenly saw a possible future into trades. So a program like this will help not only man the jobs in the future, but I think help give kids a focus for the future to finish their education and to get into a good job. So thank you.
Right, thank you, Representative Rarick. With that, Representative Gunther renews his motion to lay over House File 3658, 3658 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you for your time. Members, I think we're going to move on to Representative Baker next. Representative Baker, looks like House File 3435. And Representative Baker, I believe that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to, first of all, I'm going to have you move your bill here. Would you like to move 3435 for possible inclusion in a later bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as well as the amendment that you have as well.
Yeah, let's Representative Baker moves 3435 for possible inclusion and to your amendment, the A1 amendment. Would you like to speak to that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. What this does is just do a little technical cleanup on the bill. What it does is it brings a sunset to the bill. One-time appropriation will be available until June 30th of 2019, as well as just clarifying the grant recipients must match dollar for dollar.
Thank you. With that, all those in favor of adopting, I'm sorry, we have a question here, Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, and for staff, the A1 amendment is coded with a different House file number in the top. Does that matter or not?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Garofalo, no. The amendment, the reference to House File 3435 is correct. But if I, as long as I have this opportunity, Representative Baker, you just indicated that you want it to be a dollar-for-dollar match, and the amendment is a blank percentage match. So,
my correction, Mr. Chair, that is correct. It is a blank match. Yes, thank you.
So at this time, we will, with the technical correction here that has been explained, and with the explanation with the blank instead of a dollar-for-dollar match, Representative Baker renews his motion to adopt the A1 amendment. All of those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Representative Baker, to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for your time today. This is one that really got my attention this summer when the subcommittee was out talking about child care, and I did not realize the crisis we were in until I really sat through and listened to a lot of daycare providers that told me the stories and actually seeing the facts that Minnesota has lost 3,000 providers in daycare over the past 10 years. This is a really frightening component happening right now. We are challenged as a job provider myself. I know that my employees are facing some real challenges with daycare. And so this bill is a good component because it's more of the economic driver to help new entrepreneurs getting into this business. I have helped write a lot of business plans for small business owners. And what I like about this bill and the work that needs to be done is we're creating sort of a one-stop shop and a very detailed plan of how do you open up an in-home daycare center or a center outside of that. And with me today, Mr. Chair, I've got a couple of folks that have been working on this issue in southwest Minnesota, and I think they've got some very good testimony. And so, again, I'll leave it at that. But this is about creating more jobs and job economic development, Mr. Chair. So I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Baker. To the testifier, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Diana Anderson. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it's an honor to be here to tell you what we're seeing and hearing in our communities. I represent one of the six regional initiative foundations that collectively serve the entire geography of Greater Minnesota. And we've been working in our communities for 30 years. And for the past 12 years, we've coordinated a statewide early childhood initiative focused on providing quality care and learning experiences for our youngest kids. We have a statewide network of relationships, both metro and rural, that give us a unique and collaborative perspective on addressing the child care shortage that many of our communities see as a crisis. In the realm of things that an entrepreneur could choose to do from home, starting a daycare would probably not rise to the top of the list. And yet, home-based daycare in Greater Minnesota far outweighs the number of centers providing care. It's the way our kids are cared for in our small towns. And there's a critical shortage due to retirements and other factors. We need incentives to support new startups to meet the huge demand. Our goal as initiative funds and as rural leaders is to keep people in our communities and to get them to come back. Employers are telling me as I travel around our 18 counties that the lack of access to child care has been a determining factor in families choosing not to accept job offers in their communities. So I'll close my comments with just a quick story. I received a desperate call last year from the city administrator from Mountain Lake saying that the last private in-home daycare in their community was closing. We sent two staff, my colleague Jody Martins and someone from our microenterprise team, down to meet with the folks in Mountain Lake to talk about what we could do and what the community could do to get daycare going again in Mountain Lake. They have a temporary solution, but it is not a long-term solution. And from our perspective, the long-term solution is getting more entrepreneurs to consider opening daycares in our small communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Further testifiers. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jody Martins, and I'm the program officer with the Southwest Initiative Foundation, and I manage our Early Childhood Initiative. It wasn't until about 7 months ago when my husband and I became parents that my work that I do on a day-to-day basis became very personal. My friends told us that we should start calling around for childcare the minute we found out we were pregnant. So that's what I did. And I called around to about 30 or more providers in the community of Marshall, Minnesota, and was told either to call back closer to my due date or that it was a 2 to 3 year wait for an infant spot. Knowing what I know and the work that I do, I was somewhat prepared to hear this, yet I was devastated at the same time. And it wasn't until a month before I was due that I was able to secure a spot for my infant. And it was a very stressful time, not knowing where I was going to put my baby. This is my work. I know these things, and I felt the devastation, and I got to thinking about those people who don't understand the work and understand what a caring, loving, quality environment is. And so I know that this work, finding and being able to have quality child care providers in greater Minnesota is extremely important. And so we have many people who are traveling over 30 miles to take their child to somebody who can care for them, to drive back to work, to go another 30 miles to go and get them. And that may be for one child. Children can be in multiple different places across greater Minnesota. And so with this bill, it's going to help communities be able to work with people who may be interested in becoming a provider, so that working parents can go to work, number one, but once they're at work, they can feel comfortable that their child is in a quality environment in a safe place.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there at this time anyone in the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? If you are, please come down. Hello, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please pull up a chair and then have you state your name for the record.
My name is Jerry Cutts.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Cutts. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony and support for this work. I'm the president and CEO of First Children's Finance. We're a nonprofit, a national nonprofit. We're based in Minnesota. First Children's Finance helps children, families, and communities thrive by increasing the availability, the affordability, and the quality of early care and education. We work on the business side of child care, ensuring that child care businesses remain stable and sustainable. In October 2013, we established a partnership with the Initiative Foundations to launch a rural initiative called the Greater Than Minnesota Project. This project provides rural communities an opportunity to address child care shortages through a framework that links child care to local economic development. Child care businesses play three distinct and critical roles in the greater Minnesota economy. First, child care is its own economic sector with facilities, employees, and links to other industries. It provides services that enable parents to work, and they're an informal part of the education system that supports the development of children's next generation of workers. Child care is an economic multiplier. Every dollar spent on child care generates other business activity. A sustainable supply of high quality care is a vital part of rural. This project has three distinct activities: community planning processes that result in a community solution action plan. Last night in Grand Rapids, we held a town hall with 100 attendees that were eager to identify solutions to the very problems that have been identified today. Also, local child care task forces, including members from the private sector, implement the plan, and child care business leadership cohorts stabilize the child care businesses and plan for optimization of expansion opportunities. A large part of our work is spent partnering with rural communities to address child care shortages. Their community plans are innovative and have potential to create nimble and right-sized child care solutions. In many cases, those solutions require a level of investment to incentivize community stakeholders to move forward. The provision of grants for communities would result in making their action plans truly actionable, changing the landscape of child care in Greater Minnesota. This draft bill is exactly on target with what Greater Minnesota communities need. The Minnesota Initiative Foundation has had a complementary bill that was introduced last session. All of these ideas are on the right track because they're designed to address the needs of rural communities. I want to congratulate you on identifying an emerging trend in rural communities and to encourage you to consider creating an opportunity that would add to the vibrancy of Greater Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cutts, for your testimony. Is there any further public testimony at this time? Seeing that there is none, I'm going to close the public testimony portion of this and open up the member questions. Members, any questions at this time? Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Chair Neuberger. Just a quick comment. Just appreciate Representative Baker's job on this bill and just a good job on the testifiers and their testimony, especially the one for Marshall. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, good bill. I traveled around, too, in my district, visiting in a couple of centers, but also in some home settings. And one of the testifiers said, I don't remember who it was, that in rural Minnesota, the home centers are really what, the homes are really what we use. And I always want to preface my comments about child care by saying that I agree that we all want a caring and loving place for our children to be, my grandchildren now. But I also think that in some cases, when I listen to the people who have concerns about providing the services, the regulatory climate, and again, I preface that by saying we all want caring and loving places. I hope that through some of this, we can also address some of those concerns that will reduce some of the regulations that in many cases, I've been told, are driving people away from providing those in-home services. So it's really not a question, it's a comment, but I hope that everybody understands that and will work towards some of those things with the agencies, and those of you that are closest to it can have the most impact on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Any further questions? Members, just a quick note, there is some additional testimony. You'll find that in your packets that was submitted to us for your information. At this time, Representative Baker, you get the last word.
Mr. Chair and members, again, thank you. This is a great bill. It's going to help hopefully get some more folks in the pipeline to want to do this. It's a great industry to be in. We just need to find a better way to get them there. So thank you for your support, and I appreciate the future support as well.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Baker renews his motion to lay over House File 3435 as amended to a possible inclusion in a possible bill later. Next bill on the docket is Representative Dean still here? Representative Dean, welcome to the committee. And members, as he's making his way down, I'm going to do we have a quick housekeeping item. Just make sure that we've got all our ducks in a row here. When we heard Representative Erickson's House File 3458, the committee approved the DE2 amendment to House File 3458. I just need to make note that one correction to the DE2 was to 3558, that it was to the first engrossment of 3458. The DE2 didn't specify which engrossment it was to, so we need to clarify that so that everyone knows. This change will not affect the amendment at all. We will have the committee legislative assistant note for the record that the DE2 amended to the first engrossment of 3458 and not the original. And I can also have Anita Newman here verify that this is just a technical correction. Anita, if you'd do that, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, you are correct. It's just something that's needed to process it in the revisor's office.
Thank you, Anita. Representative Dean, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah.
And at this time, we're going to need someone to move this bill. At this time, Representative Mahoney,
I would like to move House File 3532. Thank you, Representative Mahoney and Representative Dean, to your bill.
Now I know who my friends are.
Conclusion.
All right, I know who my friends are now. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I appreciate that. Members, before you 3532, and I appreciate your support. I've brought this bill to you in the past. You know that I think government is too big, too bossy, too nosy, and it does stuff it shouldn't do, and I don't like it doing stuff that it shouldn't do. So when I support a program like this, that you know that it mostly has private money in it, which it does. It works very well, which it does, and it is extremely effective and successful, which it is. You also know that I view appropriation inversely proportional to committee time, so I will cease further testimony and refer any questions to my testifier. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dean. To your testifier, sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you. I'm Tom Streitz, president of Twin Cities Rise, and thank you for having me today. And Representative Dean, thank you, and Representative Mahoney, thank you. I'm really pleased to be in front of you and talking about this program, Twin Cities Rise, which has been in the community serving everywhere from Excelsior to Stillwater, from Anoka to Dakota County for 21 years. We have an enviable track record. We have served thousands of people, mostly very low-income people. We're making less than $5,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Upon completion of the program, they make more than $25,000 a year. We've calculated since 1997, we've generated over $165 million of wages for these individuals and $33 million of taxes for the state of Minnesota. Every dollar that's been invested in this program by the state, we've returned $7 to the taxpayers. And we're talking about individuals, many of whom have had criminal history, DUIs, or had setbacks in their life, divorces, get unemployed, end up homeless in shelters, and they come to Twin Cities Rise, and we provide a comprehensive wraparound program that basically takes them from nothing and helps them walk through the things they need to do to be economically independent, and we get them there. And at the end of the program, some people are out in 6 months, some are out in 18 months. We have employers lined up to hire these individuals. Some of our biggest supporters, and this Representative Dean references, are the largest corporations in Minnesota, Ecolab, General Mills, Thrivent. The list goes on and on and on of the Minnesota corporations that are our supporters. They contribute to Twin Cities Rise because we produce great employees for these great businesses. As you know, Minnesota is facing a worker shortage. I've talked to the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Chamber, who both support our program. And what they love about it is we're providing employees that are desperately needed in the small manufacturing as well as the large businesses throughout Minnesota. We're very proud of that record, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. At this time, though, I want to call down. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? Any additional testimony? Seeing that there is none, members, we'll move on to questions. Members, any questions? Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. I just want on the record that I tried to second and move the bill and was withheld. So my efforts were there. I was on your side on that one. It's a good bill.
I think I saw Representative Garofalo doing something over there. He might have been holding you back. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question to the Chair of Staff. On the last line, page 2, line 24, the base appropriation for this program is. So does this now go into the base and go out of the competitive grant program?
We'll turn that over to the financial people here.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
And the members of the committee and Representative Mahoney, that is correct. So this would be in the base. This would be an ongoing appropriation at $600,000 a year from the general fund. And so that would then disqualify this organization from the competitive grant program as they're receiving a direct appropriation.
Representative Mahoney. All right. Any further member questions? Seeing that there are no further member questions, Representative Dean, you get the last word.
Appreciate your support.
All right, that's good. With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion for House File 3532 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, members and staff. Appreciate
your
time.
With that, I think, are we going on? With that, Representative Fabian, 3508, House File. Reading
Lands, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you'll get any volunteers to move my bill, but I'd be happy to if it pleases the chair.
With that, Representative Fabian moves House File 3508. You have an amendment here to your bill?
I do, Mr. Chair. It's the DE2 amendment, and I'd like to move that. Chair.
All right. To your amendment, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My DE2, well, first of all, the original bill started out, and I was attempting to have members of the Public Utilities Commission elected by congressional district. Ran into some snags there and have changed the bill in the DE2 so that now members will be appointed by congressional district by the governor. So nothing changes. It wouldn't. This bill as amended will not impact any current members. It does not impact the appointments that are made by Governor Dayton. My reason for doing this is to try to bring a greater regional representation to the Public Utilities Commission. On the back of your House research summary, you can see that there is a grid that outlines the transfer from the current situation going all the way out to 2022, so that there is an orderly process to get to that point. Again, like I said, I think that this is important to, again, gain greater regional representation to the PUC. And I will repeat that it does not impact any current appointments to the Public Utilities Commission as it currently stands. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Questions towards the DE2 amendment. Representative Johnson, do you have a question towards the amendment? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hello, Representative Fabian. Just a couple of questions. With the increase in commission members, would staffing be increased accordingly then to bring the whole office up to proper staffing regulations?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I have requested a fiscal note to get the details on that. The DE2 was drafted rather late, and I did not have, I don't have the new one there, the fiscal note. So I'm guessing that there may be some.
Thank you,
maybe staff can help out with that. They've worked with me a lot on this in the past three weeks.
Hendricks, would you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so a fiscal note has been requested, but that was on the original bill. So as this amendment will be adopted, that will change the fiscal note request. Obviously, that's not done by this hearing, of course, but that should show the costs, if any, for the additional members.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the fiscal analyst. So that would include housing costs and so forth, too, when you do the fiscal?
No. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, MMB would assign any appropriate agencies, and they would then estimate the full cost for the additional members.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then Representative Fabian, I'm not opposed to the bill necessarily or anything, but the 4-4 reminds me of the Supreme Court now, where we have 8 justices and we have problems with the 4-4 decision. And I could see that happening with this, and there's something nice about having an odd number so we don't get in that predicament. What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, two things, Representative Johnson. First of all, the 4-4, I think what I envision is you have to be, as I said the other day, you have to be more Garofalo-esque in your arguments to the PUC to get 5 of the members to side with you. It makes you present a stronger case for the position that you're advocating in front of the PUC. I also think that some people have speculated that in 2020, with the census that will be done then, there's a strong possibility that we may lose a congressional seat. It would bring us back to 7, and that would address your concern at that time.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to the extent that you can get an odd number, I think that's preferable in terms of moving forward with the PUC.
Representative
Fabian. Discuss it with you longer if you would. Yep. And there may be a solution to that.
Further questions, Representative Johnson?
Thanks.
Representative Portman.
It's not to the DE, too, but what was the motion for this bill?
The motion would be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just follow up a little bit on Representative Johnson's question. So, I mean, you are hopeful that there wouldn't be a 4-4, but there will be. So what happens when there is a 4-4 decision or a 4-4 break?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, you know, there could be a 4-4 decision, and in that case, nothing would change.
Representative Wagenius.
So if nothing would change, then a utility that comes and asks for a rate increase would not get a rate increase.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not 100% certain on that. Maybe could rely on staff a little bit, Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, I see Mr. Wolf in the audience from the PUC. I think he'd be in the best position to answer a question like that.
Mr. Wolf. Come on down, please. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
And I didn't have his phone number either for my phone a friend. Thank you.
Dan Wolf, Executive Secretary with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. As Representative Fabian said, a tie vote would mean whatever the motion that is made would not be adopted. So in the case where parties come to us and ask for something, if that's not approved by a majority vote, it would not take place. But in rate cases, there's a statutory provision that if the commission does not act within a certain time period, a utility gets what they ask for. So the pressure is on the commission to do something with the rate case.
Representative Wagenius.
But a 4-4 decision is an action, and the court would read that as an action, not that there wasn't an action, because there is an action. So in that case, it seems to me that anybody who asked for a rate increase would not get it.
Mr. Wolf.
Well, I'll defer to the lawyers that are going to be arguing over this at some point if this were to happen. But I just procedurally, so that you know, Representative, what happens is for a rate case, the commission will make a series of decisions, and those are encapsulated in a written order. And if there are no decisions reached, I don't know what that order would contain, because there would be, quote, no actions taken, in which case I don't know what Mr. Eloff's opinion would be, but I'm just on the fly here thinking, if we don't have a written order within the statutory deadline, does the utility then get what they've asked for? Because that's the default provision of law.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, on the fly, my analysis would be different, and that would be that there would be an order because you have made a decision, and the decision is 4-4. I mean, you can't pretend it didn't happen. Right. So that is an action. And so without further statutory change, I think this is a wonderful for the attorneys in our state. They will have lots of fun with this, but it probably is not good for proponents of anything because there could be a 4-4 decision.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Wagenius, just so that we're understanding each other, you're right, there would have been a vote, so in a sense there's an action. What I'm saying is, as Representative Fabian said, that unless there's 5 votes for something, there's no official action that has been approved or adopted. So it would be just like the motion to an amendment here. If it's a tie vote, the amendment is not put on the bill. So there's an action in the sense there was a vote taken, but there's nothing adopted.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I would agree with that. And so anybody who would come and ask for a rate increase or whatever would not get it. So then what does a utility do in that circumstance? Just reapply?
Mr. Wolf.
Again, I'd have to, you know, double check with the people who know about this more than I do, but I think that if we don't act within the statutory deadline, the utility gets the rate increase that they ask for.
Representative Wiggins.
Okay. Well, that's even more interesting because then there's no check on... I actually disagree with you, but assuming you're right, then a utility asks for 11% rate increase, and the commissioners say no. Some of them say it should be 3, and some of them say it should be 5, and they won't budge, and it's 4-4. They get 11.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be my understanding.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's why we're so conscientious about getting orders out within the statutory deadline, to make sure that the commission decision is reflected rather than what the utility asked for.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Nobody's going to love this bill.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the author and the testifier. Under current law, there are situations where we have an even number of PUC commissioners on a decision. For example, a commissioner recuses themselves from a decision, they resign, there's a death in the commission. Not that we're hoping for that, or I'm just saying there's situations where an even number. Would it be correct in saying that the current law regarding a tie decision would be the same with this bill and versus current law? Is that a correct statement?
Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grapple, yes. That certainly tie votes could occur at any point. As you say, someone's sick, someone is not at that meeting, someone's recusing themselves.
So,
Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I think you bring forward a good proposal in terms of making sure that the entire state is represented at an important body, such as the Public Utilities Commission. If the only concern people have is the number that it's an even number versus an odd number, I think there's probably a very simple way to address that issue. If there's other concerns, then perhaps members of the committee should raise those right now.
And Representative Garofalo, any final follow-up? No. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. My question is about, a number of my questions have already been asked, so my only question that I actually have left is, can you give me a sense of what the scope of the job of a commission member is? I mean, what sort of time commitment are we talking here for a member of the commission?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simonson. You know, I don't know for sure. I haven't been to a PUC hearings and talked to commissioners. But I do know it's a substantial amount of time.
Mr. Wolf, would you like to answer that?
It was at one time kind of considered to be a part-time job, but as what has happened in lots of cases, it's morphed into something else.
Mr. Wolf.
Much greater than that.
Mr. Chair, I would agree, and committee members, I would agree with that we have weekly public agenda meetings in which the dockets are considered, and those can be a couple hours long. But behind those, as you know, doing the jobs that you do, that there's much more involved with just casting the vote or hearing the arguments on that day. There's lots of reading of the dockets. When you look at some of these dockets, they're quite large. And so they're very much a full-time position.
Representative Simonson, any further follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm hearing that essentially it was a full-time position, which is not... it's not reflected in the fiscal law, which we don't have, obviously, yet. But you're proposing, Representative Fabian, to increase the commission from 5 to 8, which I'm assuming is a significant increase in cost. And I don't want you to get me wrong, because there are pieces of your bill that I enjoy with the greater representation from Greater Minnesota. But I have a number of the same concerns as Representative Wagenius has brought up and Representative Johnson. But I also would just say this. This seems the type of change that if we were going to propose a change to this significance, that we would, you know, work with all the interested parties, and including the PUC, and try to bring it together. But I kind of like the concept. I just think it may be just a little bit too premature. But that's it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
Mr. Chair, not to belabor the issue, but I'm kind of new to some of the energy side of this, and I'm learning about the PUC, and it just doesn't make sense to me that we would switch to an even number. And I'm just wondering if you can explain the advantage of that current versus the odd number, because if we are indeed creating a spot that would then create lawsuits possibly or questions that lawyers have to answer, why would we not make it decisive rather than leave it in a limbo land that way? That's my concern, and maybe you can help me understand that, because I really don't quite get all of that part.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Isaacson, one of the things that I kind of kicked around is, if we were going to, from the very beginning, make sure that we have an odd number, when we get to 2020 in the census and we have an even number,
How do we then balance that out? Are we going to take somebody off the commission? And the more I talk to and listen to the state demographer, you know, at different times talking about what's happening to the population in the state of Minnesota, I mean, there's a part of me that doesn't want us to lose, obviously, a congressional seat, but it seems to me more than likely, and I think that the time frame that where we would have an even number is really quite diminished by the circumstances that are before us.
We may not.
Representative Isaacson.
I think that makes sense. I think that, though, that just like you're trying to solve it now, why wouldn't we want it to be odd number till then, and then we have to come up with a new solution? That way it stays in a situation where we're not creating a limbo and, you know, long-term effects, especially if there's ambiguity in between this concept of what a 4-4 vote really means, right? Because you could make one at large from that point on. You could remove one. You could... however you want to divide. I mean, you're redoing it now based on congressional districts. It doesn't mean there isn't a new rubric we could look at. So I just would feel a lot better about this if we were to move it and have it an odd number. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
I'll pass. Yeah.
You pass. Representative Fabian, did you have a follow-up on that?
Yes, I do. You know, and I think that in working with Mr. Eliff, when we look at these things, we could change the staggering ever so slightly and move them down so that we, you know, that we could avoid the even number. Me, kind of personally thinking about it, I almost like the idea of a full-time even number because it forces the parties coming in to make a stronger argument. Instead of having a 4-4, you know, they're going to work harder to get to a 5-3. But, you know, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily married to what we have here. I'm certainly open to discussions with Representative Johnson, Isaacson, and Simonson, and the PUC to come up with a system that works better for all of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Metzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. I'm going to preface this with you don't have to answer it, but what happened if we had 4-4 and one person was sick? And didn't? No, I'm kidding. You don't have an answer. I think exactly, we've answered exactly this question enough today. I'm just trying to make it lighthearted so we can move on.
Yep. We already have that situation, Mr. Chair, and it's dealt with in statute and it's dealt with at the commission.
Any further member questions here? Representative Grafflo, did you have any further comment on this at all? Okay. Do we have any?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of points of clarification. One, the commission being a quasi-judicial body, we do not support or oppose any legislation coming before this committee, and we're certainly not here to take a position on this bill one way or the other. We'll do whatever you direct us to do. And then to Representative Johnson's question, well, certainly when we get the fiscal note request, we'll certainly work that through. Just again, you know, seeing this today and thinking it through, you'd have three additional commissioners, so you'd have some costs there, maybe some staffing costs. I'd have to think about office space. Right now, we're configured for five, so we'd have to think about space and where we'd put those. And I think you asked the question, Representative Johnson, about housing. And if I misheard that, then correct me. But as I read the DE amendment, there's not a provision that talks about, you know, if you're so many miles outside of St. Paul, you get a housing reimbursement. So I don't know if that was the question. Or
it was.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know that we would build that into a note because I don't know that that's provided for.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Any further member questions? Seeing that there are no further member questions, Representative Fabian renews his motion to adopt the DE2 amendment. All of those in favor of the DE2 amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion carries. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we've had a good discussion, and there's a number of points that have been raised. I think that the overall message that I want to convey and the reason for me bringing this bill forward is to get greater regional representation to the Public Utilities Commission that oversees a very wide range of issues that affect much of greater Minnesota. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Fabian. With that, is there any further public testimony on this bill? Seeing that there is none. With that, Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay over House File 3508 as amended to a possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Fabian, as long as we got you in the hot seat, let's move on to... Oh, I'm sorry. At this time, Representative Hortman, did you have a question for Representative Garofalo?
I do. We keep making motions to lay things over to a possible future bill, and I just wonder when we'll learn if there is, in fact, a possible future bill and what might be in it.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I think our caucus is, we're caucusing tonight issues such as if there's going to be targets or not targets, the structure of if there'll be an omnibus bill, if so, how many omnibus bills there'll be, sort of the confines of that. And so I would say that we would know, we should probably know within 2 or 3 days. The Ways and Means Committee is currently scheduled to meet on Thursday night. I think we may have some more clarification once the committee meets then, but certainly no promises, no guarantees. You remember last year, even though we knew we were going to have an omnibus bill, the phrase I used was possible, might be included possibly in a later bill that may or may not exist, and we knew we were doing one then. So that's the best I can answer you with right now.
Representative Hortman, follow up.
Just so, would you expect if you do have a bill, then it would be coming out not this week but next week?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I got to double check. I don't think it would be out next week. Third deadline is 21st.
Yeah.
21st. Right. So we have not been given a schedule for. As you know, there's a third deadline that's universal for all finance committees. But in terms of which committees are going when, I don't have that schedule yet. So as soon as I have a framework for when that's assigned, I'll be communicating that with you and Representative Mahoney, as well as other members of the committee. But I just, right now, I don't, you remember last year, we took the omnibus bill and actually released it in two sections publicly. We put the energy stuff out early, then the other stuff later. I don't anticipate we'll be doing that this time. It'll probably just be, if there's an omnibus bill, it'll be one large omnibus bill, and we'll certainly get that out as soon as we can to people, just for no other reason to find any technical or drafting errors that tend to happen in that process.
Representative Hartman.
Last question, and just I would hope that we would have enough notice where we could draft amendments, because I have a feeling I'll have a lot of input on whatever you produce.
Yeah, Representative Grubb.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, my experience has been that when chairs try to hurry up and submit a bill and don't let the minority party offer amendments, it actually results by a factor of 10 in a longer debate. It doesn't matter which party's in control of that with regards to that. But no, we're certainly, and I'll be communicating with you guys in terms of when the deadline will be established for amendments, if there's amendments to amendments, how we're going to approach those items. So.
Representative Mahoney, did you have a question for Representative Garofalo?
I actually do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Chair Garofalo. We've had some concerns over the years about a omnibus finance bills with a lot of policy in them, and I think you're well aware of how much fun those are. Do you have a plan to, or if we do have an omnibus bill, do you intend to have a lot of policy in it, or are you going to try and separate that out?
Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I don't expect more than one bill coming out of this committee. I don't foresee a situation where that would occur. My experience has been that when people say they don't want policy in an omnibus bill, that they what they mean is they don't want policy in a bill that they're opposed to. If they're in support of the policy, then they're okay with it. So I think you'll see, or I know you'll see, if there's an omnibus bill, you'll see finance appropriations as well as financial policy as well as straight policy in the bill. Whether there's going to be a separate bill for each of the finance committees, whether those are merged together into a giant sort of House File 1812 omnibus bill, or whether they're broken up into chunks, I honestly do not know the answer to that question. But I will tell you, historically, the House has always wanted to have multiple bills for greater input and more conference committees going on. And the Senate, regardless of which party is in control, always responds by sending us back one bill. They send us one bill, and there's an omnibus bill. So I think if you look at the history of this, that's kind of the path that we're going to be on. In terms of how many bills are coming out of the House, I couldn't tell you. But if the Senate acts like the Senate always does, they're going to insist on one omnibus finance supplement policy bill.
Representative Mahoney. Thank you. With that, members, a brief announcement here. O'Neill's House File 3512, we are not going to be hearing that this afternoon. We're going to hear that tomorrow. So, Representative Fabian, you have the distinction of having the last bill. And to your bill, House File 3377, Representative Fabian, do you like to move your bill? I believe the next spot will be the Tax Committee.
Yeah, that's correct, Mr. Chair, and I would so move House File 3377 to Taxes.
As so moved. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I've been involved in a lot in the past in the years that I've been in the legislature is trying to come up with workforce housing, and it's an issue that affects much of Minnesota. I've worked with different people on different tactics, I'll say, different bills over the years. This is a bill that I was attracted to and the ideas in it for a variety of reasons. You know, when you go through the bill, in Section 1, what we're doing there is basically establishing the program at MHFA that encourages different people to be involved in home ownership projects. In Subdivision 2, we're taking a look at using the Challenge Grant funds to making sure that they meet the income requirements for economic development, unless, of course, the project is intended to construct housing for low and moderate income families. So there's, you know, we're able to address a variety of issues here. Subdivision 3 requires the Commissioner of Housing Finance to develop an application process. And what attracts me to this is to consult with interested stakeholders to develop the guidelines for the programs. So it's a process that's going to be collaborative. And then one of the other things in Subdivision 4, we're talking about grants being given preference to non-state or to projects that have a match, some sort of a local match. Subdivision 5 provides that MHFA will attempt to distribute the grants equally between metro and areas outside of the metro, what I refer to as Greater Minnesota. And then Subdivision 6 requires the commissioner to submit a annual report to the chairs of the House and the Senate. And then the funding mechanism for this is the deed and mortgage tax that's collected. What we would like to do with this is starting in fiscal year 17, any growth in that revenue then would be directed into this program. So if in fiscal year 16 we bring in X amount of dollars from the deed and mortgage tax, in fiscal year 17, if that grows by $2 million or $3 million or $6 million or whatever, those dollars then would be directed into this program over at MHFA. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can turn over for some more comments from my testifier.
To you, testifier. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the executive director with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. I also have the pleasure of serving as the chair currently as the Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition. And I'm also here as a member of a collaboration of a number of home ownership focused organizations, mine being represented by the Community Land Trust. But I'm also joined here today by Jenny Larson, here on behalf of Minnesota CAP agencies, Jim Urchell representing community developers, Warren Kramer here representing manufactured housing across the state. And for close to a year now, we've all recognized in our various geographies and service areas that there's been a need in our communities to create ownership housing at a much faster rate than what we've been able to. And so we came together and I felt that by coming together on this, we'd be able to articulate the need collectively to better serve the state as a whole. At this point in time, as we've looked at the numbers over the last 4 years, approximately 4% of the state's awards for production of housing across the state, only 4% of those funds have gone toward ownership housing. Granted, a good chunk of the dollars that don't go toward ownership housing also have some ties coming from the federal level. So in order to use those dollars, they have to be used more often than not in a multifamily or rental scenario. There's great need across the state in local communities. Each of these organizations that I'm working with best know their communities and the challenges that are faced as it relates to ownership housing. Here in the metro area, we're also facing many of those same needs. One thing I think worth noting is that across the state, our organizations serve community of color households at a rate 2 to 4 times, if not more than that, of what the local geography home ownership rates are. And so we're working forward on addressing those needs in each one of our geographies. As Representative Fabian shared, these funds would be captured through capture of the deed tax and mortgage registry tax. We estimate that they would create $6 to $10 million of funding on an annual basis. That would allow us to double, if not triple, the number of ownership units created on an annual basis through these funds. Key to these dollars are that they're flexible, that they'll allow us to serve our communities in the needs that are best represented in those areas. And they're also flexible in the sense that a lot of the dollars that do pass through the finance agency are dollars that have a lot of restrictions to them. And we see that this allows us to put the dollars out the door quickly to assist households to do better for themselves and their families. The dollars would be able to be used for acquisition, rehab, new construction, manufactured housing preservation, and the creation, as well as allowing the CAP agencies to create some innovative uses of those funds. The dollars, as it relates to community land trusts, we've been able to serve now over 1,500 households, achieving not only affordable home ownership across the state, and affordable is relative to the communities that they serve, but permanent owner occupancy, and able to serve households at incomes that are representative of their communities. We support homeowners after those purchases, and we ensure that they're successful in home ownership through our long-term relationship with homeowners. Just in closing, the dollars that we're requesting would help households, working households across the state. Examples of that include a household of three in Duluth. The mom is a teacher, earning $52,000. In Cloquet, a couple with children earned $61,000 a year, working for the health industry. A nurse in Mayo in Rochester, earning $65,000 a year. And a fulfillment worker at DigiKey earning $32,000 a year. Each of these households, individuals, be able to purchase a home. In closing, we believe that this is a win. It's creating jobs. It's creating a payback to the state. It's better serving the households in all of our communities across the state. And it's a way for us to really start to create more housing, more ownership housing across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Washburn. Representative Fabian, did you have any additional testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
At this time, would anyone from the public like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing that there are none, we'll close the public testimony portion and open this up to member questions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either to Representative Fabian or the testifier, it's capturing the growth in the mortgage tax, registry tax, indeed, transfer fees. Is there then a base that you're going to take anything over and above a certain amount that comes in for that? And what would that amount, I mean, what's the base amount there?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, the base would be what was there in 2016.
Okay,
in fiscal year 16. And then I want to double check and make sure. But then I think then the base moves to fiscal year 17. Each year it's going to hopscotch forward or leapfrog forward to the next year. And if that's something that we have to clear up, then we can certainly do that here as well.
Yeah,
In our next stop, at taxes, excuse me.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like a better clarification on exactly how that's going to work. For sure. Thank you.
I'm pretty sure it resets each year, and I just we'll double check on that to make sure. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Follow up. Any more, Representative Scott? Any further questions, members? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not so much a question, just a comment to say I think this is a good bill. It provides a lot of flexibility, and we need housing all over the state. And I think homeownership is definitely, since it's been on the decline in our state, and especially in some sectors more than others. We need to, I think, do this kind of investment. So I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Clark. With that, no further questions. With that, Representative Fabian, you get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other thing to point out for members, in Section 2 of the bill, it does sunset. This program sunsets
in 2025. One of the issues that happens in a lot of small towns in Minnesota is, you know, we have a lot of old storefronts and so forth on our main streets in Greenbush, and just pick one. And one of the things that attracts me to this program is the fact that you can do the rehabs or the conversions, and you can convert some existing facilities into housing. And the other thing, of course, is, as Mr. Washburn mentioned, there's a wide variety of potential here for flexibility, from manufactured homes, rehabs, conversions, you name it. So much of this could really be helpful with regards to housing in both greater Minnesota and in the metro area. So with that, I respectfully renew my motion.
And with that, Representative Fabian renews his motion to move House File 3377 to taxes. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Off to taxes. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, with that, I believe we are adjourned.